there's a lot of hate going on. You pop a cherry with an orgy and it's all good.
Really, really talented, handsome young man.
Don't walk in here with a giant banana and think everything's going to be peaches.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, February 21st, 2011. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today, Alligator Sports' two best censored cussers. We got Jesse Simonton.
What's going on?
And Tom Green.
Nice to be back talking about something other than recruiting this time.
Definitely. And we got you two on the show today because we're going to talk Florida baseball. You guys are our two beat writers. We're going to have Cody Jones from Scout.com, baseball writing savant, Cody Jones.
It's like porn to him. It's kind of unfortunate right. He's missing this.
He's very excited about this, but he woke up sick today. So to the three of you who saw in the box in today's paper that we're going to have Cody Jones on and are disappointed to not hear his voice, I'm sorry, but thanks for reading the paper. We're going to talk about a lot of aspects of Florida baseball season this show. We're going to talk about opening weekend, Florida swept USF, and do some preseason prediction stuff, sort of forecast how we think the Gator season's going to go down. Let's start off with the opening weekend. You guys covered the team this time. Jesse, give us a little rundown.
Yeah, I mean, Florida played really well this weekend. Obviously, like you said, they swept the series. Their pitching was outstanding. Their starters went a combined 17 innings. They only gave up one walk. Had a bunch of strikeouts. I mean, they came in with a lot of hype and expectations, and they lived up to it, at least for that first weekend. I mean, South Florida started two pretty good guys, the guys that got drafted in the top 10 to 15 rounds on Friday and Saturday, and the bats did decent. I mean, they scored seven runs the first game. They had a lot of field. The Gators were big on fielder's choices this weekend. They had a lot of fielder's choices.
They also had a few balls that would have been gone with the old bats.
Yeah, I think Maddox might have hit a grand slam on Friday night.
Tucker would have had a home run yesterday.
Yeah, Tucker hit a bomb on Friday. Zanino got a hold of one pretty good yesterday on Sunday. So, I mean, overall, it was a good weekend. Carson Whitson made his debut and looked really sharp and didn't have any nerves or butterflies that, you know, caused him to flail away. So, it was a successful weekend for Sully's club.
All right, let's talk about Whitson a little more. He was the number 9 pick in MLB Draft 2010 with the Padres. Turned down $2.1 million to come to Florida. I mean, obviously, he looks like he's pro-ready just for the first time we've seen him.
Yeah, I think he's an idiot for coming. I mean, honestly, after watching that game yesterday, and according to a radar gun, he was throwing consistently around 95. I mean, he's 18 years old. He has a nasty break on a slider. He had pretty good control. You know, that's one of the things. For a kid that young, you don't know how well he's going to actually be able to maintain control while keeping his movement on his pitches. But he was throwing his two-seamer well. I mean, I don't know how much more money he expected to get. I mean, according to reports, you know, he was offered a little less than the number 8 guy, but more than the number 10 guy. I mean, he was slotted right for where he was. I don't know if he was expecting Matthew Stafford money or something, but I don't know what he – but, I mean, he looked great. I mean, he had 9 strikeouts.
In 5 innings.
Good God. Well, I mean, what were the rest of his numbers like? What was his line?
Only one hit, one walk, no runs allowed. 66 pitches, 44 of them were for strikes.
He retired 11 straight. He actually threw more balls than anybody else for Florida, ironically, and he still threw really well.
Retired 11 in a row, including 5 strikeouts in a row at one point.
Yeah. Jesus. I was going to say, 66 pitches in 5 innings, not half bad either.
No, it's not. I mean, we'll talk about Hudson Randall and some of the other guys later. I think Hudson Randall's got that kind of like Maddox quality where he only throws strikes, kind of Cliff Lee type of thing, where he threw 11 balls in his start on like near close to 70 pitches. Jesus. So it was ridiculous. And he wasn't even on his A game. But Whitson looked good. I mean, one hit, 11, you know, in 11 straight. I mean, that's tough to do with all that hype and, you know.
It's just your first start of the year,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, first start of the year.
And the one hit was in his first inning. Struck out the first guy, then allowed a hit, then retired 11 straight.
Wow. I mean, he even whipped out a changeup a couple times and got some swing and misses. Yeah, I mean, it was a very, very impressive debut. And hopefully, you know, He could change the forecast of Florida's season. You know, I said I wrote earlier this year, right before the season, that I didn't think they had an ace. Mm-hmm. And it's way too early to tell, obviously, from one start.
Right.
But if he could develop into a Garrett Cole of UCLA or the kid from TCU that's won 16 games, I think that, you know, that could benefit Florida. He could actually move up in the weekend rotation.
Hmm. There's also an issue, and I talked about this a lot during the summer with the Rays when, like, Jeremy Hellickson, a guy, came up for Tampa Bay. they say that you're going to be at your best almost right away because they don't have film on you. So, I mean, I'd imagine they don't have a lot of his high school tape to scout, you know, and everything he's doing is unpredictable to a certain extent. So will people, like, catch up to him? Or well,
he also pitched for Team USA.
Right, so there's so, a little more film out there.
There's film out there. And Sully was talking about that yesterday. The thing about these guys now, like, they don't come in as nervous because they've had more experience pitching in front of scouts,
right,
you know, between playing in off-season leagues, playing for Team USA, stuff like that. So, like, there's more film on them.
Okay.
And I completely agree with your point about Hellickson and other rookies that are really promising when they start. I mean, the Braves had a guy several years ago, Chuck James, that was terrible and won 11 games. I mean, and then in his rookie season, then he didn't do anything the rest of the time because people caught up and they were like, he just throws beach ball changeups. So, but in college baseball, I don't really know because there's not a lot of good hitters.
Right.
So I feel like the pitchers are going to dominate anyways. And then, especially now with these bats, I mean, it's making it even harder to hit some mashers. So, I mean, we'll definitely see.
All right, let's talk about the other starters. You mentioned Hudson Randall Saturday night.
Saturday, he looked strong. I mean, he has pinpoint control. Yeah, I think he didn't walk a guy in six innings. He got into some trouble a couple times, but showed some good composure to get out of it. He got ambushed like five or six times where the night before South Florida was really patient and against Randall because he was throwing all these strikes, kind of the same thing people do to Cliff Lee sometimes, that they just swing at that first strike because they're afraid of them just nitpicking and getting behind so early. Right. So they ambushed him four or five times on the night, but I mean, he didn't labor through six or anything. I mean, it was pretty free and easy, and he got out of it and only gave up one run, and that was the only run the Gators gave up the whole afternoon. So,
God. What was his line, his final line? Did anybody have it offhand here?
Yeah, it was six innings, six strikeouts, no walks, seven hits and one run.
Yeah. It's, I mean, because USF is not a joke of a team.
Obviously. No, like, no, they're not. And Sully said that. Sully had something to say about that, too, about how he, you know, enjoys the competition against USF because they do have some quality arms and some good depth so that it's not like playing a little floozy at the beginning of the season that they can just knock around 12-0.
Yeah, he said they're an SEC quality team.
Mm, wow. Yeah. Is that from your perspective, is that, I mean, from what you saw of them, is that realistic?
I don't know. They couldn't hit a lick. I mean, like, obviously the Gators pitching is very good, but even some of their best balls that they did strike weren't particularly impressive. Their leadoff hitter, I think, had to have striken out at least six times on the weekend.
Solid. That's what you want out of a leadoff spot.
He did make up for it out in right field, though. He had a couple nice plays.
He did have a nice diving stab that saved a couple
Rob
runs.
Rob Tucker's home run yesterday, too.
Yeah. Robbing is a little slight. I mean, it was kind of at the wall, and he didn't really have to even jump. It was just kind of like right there. But, I mean, it probably would have been out, maybe. But he was like playing so deep, you can't really call that robbing.
Right. He didn't like do what that Japanese guy did and run along the fence.
Yeah,
and
it wasn't Otis Nixon, so.
All right, then Friday night starter Brian Johnson, man, the do-it-all man.
Yeah, he went six scoreless, faced the minimum 18 batters, only gave up two hits. But each time he gave up a hit, his defense got a double play behind him on the next batter. Yeah, he struck out six.
He was just throwing strikes. I mean, I think I don't have it off the top of my head, but it was like 14 or 15 of the however many batters he faced.
15 of 18
first pitch strikes. Wow. I mean, he was just really consistent, pretty easy. I felt like South Florida had more butterflies than Florida that night just because the crowd was really electric. There was a lot of people there. You know, it was opening night. They're going against number one. So they, talking about how the next day they were a lot more aggressive, they got in deep counts every time. I mean, it was 1-2, 0-2, 0-1, seemingly every at bat.
Right.
And so they were in deep count, and they just started, you know, flailing at his – and he developed his changeup, which he apparently learned on Team USA from Garrett Cole.
Hmm.
And that got a lot of hitters off balance. And like Tommy said, he got a couple double plays, so –
I got two things I was going to ask about based off of that. The crowd, because Florida baseball is generally pretty well supported, but then, I mean, number one team in the country, how's the fan support coming out?
Friday and Saturday was great. Friday night they had like 5,100, right?
Yeah, they had a weekend record for the opening weekend record, and it was like the second most fans they'd had since the series against Georgia last year.
Wow.
So it looks like this team should be pretty well supported. Obviously, yesterday's game was a little bit
1 o'clock start on a Sunday. Not going to get the students out there.
And not even the students, but then even if you might get the students, you know, I mean, we had the basketball game up in the press box, but the Gators were playing LSU at the same time. That's true. you're gonna lose some fans of that. But it was surprising that on a Friday night when gymnastics gets a ton of people and SEC swimming and diving is going on.
Probably about 6-7 people went to that.
No, I understand, but there's a lot of stuff going on just on campus in general. Right. And the MAC was still pretty full, so.
Yeah, I was impressed with Friday just because they were competing with the gymnastics crowd. You know, we got to share that parking lot there at the Odom.
Parking was a nightmare Friday. I was just driving through campus. My God, there was a lot happening. So
yeah, I had to park behind the engineering building and walk to the stadium just because I didn't want to deal with all the traffic going
into
the parking lot.
I sweet-talked my way into the thing because I had the scooter. I was like, let me get this Green Hornet up in there.
I was going to say, did you have a pass or did you just like sweet-talk?
No. Yeah, that sweet-talk the sweet cop. I said, let me get this thing up in there. She said, okay.
That's good stuff. The other thing I want to talk about based off of what you said is the hype. Florida didn't let the hype of the number one and the opening weekend, and they're not an old veteran team by any means. You'd think that they'd come out a little nervous, or it's always the thing we talk about with other sports. They're too young and dumb to be nervous. You know, they don't know to be nervous. Did you see any of that out there?
Well, yeah, I wrote that in one of the little season previews or whatever, that they seem to be just kind of brushing off the hype. They're kind of accepting it and embracing it, but they're not really worried about it, and they're not they don't seem to be like the 06 team that completely just faltered when they were ranked preseason number one, at least so far. I mean, they probably are just dumb and stupid. They have a lot of kids with level-headed shoulders, but I mean, it remains to be seen. They don't have some of the brightest tools in the shed.
Right.
Yeah, just look at their base running for that.
Ah, jeez.
They got picked off how many times?
Yeah, Sully was – the one thing Sully was pissed about during the weekend was that their base running was pretty poor. I mean, they got caught stealing a couple times, got picked off, didn't advance runners, bad base running on sack flies and that kind of stuff. Josh Adams looked – I mean, I wrote that thing about he had kind of an up-and-down weekend. He made a couple good sack bunts, but then twice he couldn't advance runners just on – when a guy was on second, when Fontana was on second, all Josh had to do was hit the ball to the right side of the infield, and he couldn't even do that. So that'll be something interesting to watch the rest of the season, how he – because he did slot him in the two-hole, which was up a lot more spots than he was at the end of last season because he only hit 220.
One thing I want to talk about, you mentioned O'Sullivan handling the hype. I was really in favor of what he was in one of y'all's stories this week, his quote about, like, we're accepting it and we're acknowledging it and we recognize that we're the number one team in the country. Like, so many teams are just like, I don't care about the rankings. We don't care. But they at least they're recognizing. Like, they're there. They have to deal with them. And you just go from there.
Yeah, yeah. And in that thing, he specifically said, you know, the polls are the polls. We know we're good.
Right.
And we're going to be good. Right. And so we're going to go out there and win. And, right. I mean, he made no bones about it. And he, you know, also in that thing that I wrote, he's like, we want to go to Omaha. We want to win. And that's the goal. And his players say that, too. I mean, they don't say it as eloquently as him. And they don't say it as
just saying something.
They don't say it as, you know, have as much macho behind it and machismo behind it. But they want to win. They want to go to Omaha, and they're saying a lot of the right things about wanting to be ranked number one at the end of the season, not the beginning. So,
well, the thing is, like, so many teams just refuse to recognize that, and they're like, we're just taking it one game at a time, one series at a time, where it's like you kind of have to respect the fact that this team knows it is good enough that Omaha is the ultimate goal, and they want, like, they're acknowledging that. And I don't know, I think that's a very – that's how you get to Omaha. You have the confidence that you can, you know?
No, right. I completely agree.
Because they know from last year they made it. They only lost a couple key pieces. They lost Den Decker out in center, and they lost Kevin Chapman closing out.
Right, and they have the – I mean, the staff and the pitching is good enough to take them there on its own, it seems like. Other pitching stuff, I want to talk about the bullpen. That was sort of the whole closer by committee thing we talked about going into the season. Where does the – how does the bullpen get a shakeout as the year goes on?
I mean, I think that's going to be a fluid situation for the next 3 weeks. I think that Sully has no idea. He has a lot of good arms down there. Disco's pretty good. Toledo looked pretty good in his opening performance. Paco was really strong yesterday. I mean, I don't know. Miranda was the one that looked the weakest, and I kind of called him out in my opening pitching preview as a guy that, you know, had needed to kind of step up because he had a lot of expectations, and he has a really live arm. He throws hard. He's got some good stuff, but he just doesn't seem to be able to harness the control. So he was the only guy that really got, obviously, Mr. Hip Injury, Pantliotis, Toby over there wasn't looking so good. But, I mean, he's coming back. We'll see what happens to him. I mean, Tom can tell you about him later. He's going to start on Tuesday, I think. So.
Yeah, I agree with Jesse. Like, right now it's a fluid situation. So he's not going to know for sure until they get into SEC play. That's when he wants to have everything locked down, really. Huh. But he used eight guys out of the bullpen on the weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They all pitched well, except for Miranda and Panayiotis. Toledo looked really strong coming in, getting his first career save on Saturday night. He came in bases loaded and got out of that jam.
Now, I will say, man, he got Toledo got a little lucky that Nolan Fontana made a diving grab and flicked the ball. I mean, it was more of, and as Toledo admitted, he thought he had given up a go-ahead single because the bases were loaded and the guy ripped it up the middle. But Fontana made a hell of a play. The two guys that I thought looked the best pitched yesterday, and that was Paco, obviously, and then they have a freshman, Daniel Gibson, that's this lefty that just came in throwing gas in the ninth inning, was throwing around 93, 94, according to Sullivan. And, I mean, he looked really strong, and he was the 11th guy they threw out there. And he had a lot of – he was one of the guys that during the spring, O'Sullivan talked about progressing really well from the fall to now, that he was definitely going to be an integral part of the bullpen, that don't count out him and another guy, Kish, another freshman righty who didn't pitch this weekend, but guys he said would likely contribute at a high level for this number one team. So we'll see. It definitely is going to be a long season, and so I don't think they'll have any defined roles for a good little while.
Right.
And another freshman that came out on Friday, Crawford, came out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
He looked pretty good, too. Struck out two in one inning.
Yeah, I was surprised to see his name first before Kish came out there. So,
One guy you mentioned, Tom, that you wanted to talk about is Panayiotis. This guy's starting Tuesday, correct?
Yeah, Sully said he's starting Tuesday. He underwent hip surgery in the offseason. Apparently it had been hurting him all of last year. There were days after he pitched that he said he couldn't even walk. So, and he still led the team in wins and strikeouts, right?
Yeah. The wins number's a little inflated. Last season he got not always inflated just because wins is an inflated stat for our sabermetrics buddies out there. But he picked up like two wins in the opening series against USF last season. He was out of the bullpen, they won an extra innings game, and they won another game late. So he was in the bullpen. So he had picked up two wins that way, and I think he had a third bullpen win somewhere else in the season. So it's a little inflated stat with the 11 wins, but still, I mean, he pitched pretty well for the Gators last season. Was coming in, I mean, when you talk to people, they're like, you know, why didn't Alex pick Supers this weekend? It's like, well, they got some better arms than him right now.
And plus, Sully wanted to take a swing with him. That's why they got him some work on Friday night, just because he hasn't seen live game action other than inter-squad scrimmages and stuff. But you want to get him out there against some other competition before you throw him out there in a start against FAU on Tuesday.
Do you think that's purely it, though, the injury thing and slow start, or do you think Sully probably at this point believes that Johnson, Randall, Whitson is the weekend rotation the way to go?
I mean, the way those guys pitched on the weekend, like, it's hard to argue that they're not the way to go.
Right.
But it does take time to come back from surgery like that.
Okay.
You're going to be rusty at first. It's going to take you a few starts to shake it off and get back into the rhythm of things.
O'Sullivan said at the beginning of the season that the weekend rotation is never the same at the beginning than it is at the end. It'll be interesting with this one. The order may not be the same, but I have a feeling that these three guys are going to stay. They have the best stuff. These three guys had the best stuff. I actually think if anybody's going to get knocked out, ironically, I think it would be Johnson.
Johnson, yeah.
I think that Johnson, of the three, will likely be the most inconsistent. He pitched really well last year. I mean, this is just a gut feeling on my part from watching him and seeing. I mean, I feel like that Randall didn't even pitch that well and still just, like, shut him down. It was just, like, his motion is just so free and easy. So we'll see. But they may want to keep Johnson in there because he's a lefty. So, you know, you have that whole dynamic there, and they already have a couple strong lefties in the bullpen with this Gibby guy and Paco Rodriguez. So I don't see Toledo breaking the rotation. I don't see Fani or Disco or whatever we call him, Anthony.
Anthony.
Breaking the rotation either. I mean, he looked well in his opening outing after he struggled pretty damn hard last season walking people. Right. So he did really well. So
yeah, I'm sure some of those guys will get, like, midweek starts throughout the season. But as far as the weekend rotation goes, I'm with Jesse. I think it's going to be those three.
Here's my my college baseball noob question. Like, what do you want your Friday night starter to be your top guy or Sunday starter? What's the general 1-2-3 progression? Because I'm thinking Whitson's got to be not the ace, but like the top guy.
Agreeable Radio Man asked me the same question, and I had no idea to the answer because I don't know. I don't know either. I mean, I feel like you. I would start personally the best on Friday
right.
to open the series yeah, to kind of like set exactly. a tone type of thing. But then at the same time, Sully yesterday was like the Sunday game is the hardest game to win because you've already played these two other games and
more
you've already
familiar,
gone through
yeah.
other stuff. And then so maybe you put your best on. I have no. Yeah, I don't know. But
right.
these three will likely stay. But they may not be in that order. It may not be Johnson, Randall, Whitson for okay. the rest of the season. You know, and obviously it's got to be a slow thing. You can't just switch them up
right.
week one.
Yeah.
But obviously, slowly through the season, they may change roles.
Yeah, I think the answer to that question kind of changes from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. Like, beginning of the season series, you know, is just warm-up series pretty much. Then when you get down to the end, you know, and you're, like, playing in Hoover at the SEC Championship or playing in the regionals or super regionals, you might want to throw your best guy out there on Sunday.
Right.
If it comes down to it.
I'd also imagine you scout more on matchups as you get toward, especially toward the SEC tournament. You know, if you have a lefty who's real yeah. good against a left-handed hitting lineup or whatever, I'd
definitely.
Imagine it would come down more to that.
Definitely, definitely.
Speaking of lineups, let's talk about the Gators, people who broke out this weekend. Nolan Fontana just won't stop getting on base. Can you talk about him a little bit? One of
yeah,
y'all?
He said he was seeing the ball like a beach ball. He said it was an understatement, actually, to say it looked like a beach ball.
There's somebody's lead. Somebody wrote that lead, I'll bet.
He was a 9-12 at the plate, batting .750 on the opening weekend. I know it's a small sample size, but that's still pretty good. And got hit by two pitches, made it on base 11 of 14 times. So his on base percentage right now is .786, I believe.
The encouraging side was he got on base a lot of different ways. He ripped some doubles down the line. He had a couple infield hits that he beat out. He had just some other. Regular the mill, solid knocks. He got nailed in the back twice last yesterday, which I asked him about, which his response was kind of funny. So, I mean, he had a good weekend. The rest of the hitters, other than really the surprise of Mr. Pigott, Daniel Pigott had two hits in Saturday and Sunday. The rest of the guys were kind of up and down. I mean, Tucker had a nice game Friday,
right.
and then he and Zunino had a terrible weekend. Zunino hit one home run, his only hit of the series was a home run. He did not look that comfortable at the plate. Maddox knocked in several runs. I don't know how many he knocked in, but he only had a couple hits. I mean, he was getting a lot of the sac flies and fielder's choices. So.
Yeah, he had 3 RBI on the weekend.
Yeah, he had 3 RBIs, but I think he only had like 2 hits maybe. So
yeah. Batting .200.
Yeah, so I mean, the Gators' bats definitely, and I think at this point in the season, with the new bats plus the pitching not facing a ton of live pitching, only facing live pitching for 2 weeks.
Right.
I feel like the hitters are going to be behind anyways, so we'll see.
Where's Fontana batting? Is he
he's a
leadoff
man?
Yeah. All right.
That's what you want from him.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Just somebody who always gets on base for the Josh Adams and the Preston Tuckers of the world to knock him in. I feel like we've done nothing but crap on Daniel Pigott for like the last however long he's been here. Is he like legitimate now? I don't know.
I mean, he got 2 starts on the weekend because they were going up against lefties. They wanted to throw him in there. Didn't start on Friday, but Saturday and Sunday did well. He's got a .571 on base percentage for the weekend.
Huh. And he started in right?
Left field.
Left field. Okay, left. I was going to say, how did that outfield shake out?
Tucker was in right all weekend, so he took him out late in games a couple times just to
right. get defensive replacement, whatever.
Cam Washington's played the first game in center field, and he looks the most comfortable playing center field. Now, because Bryson Smith, formerly an infielder, now he's going to be an outfielder, can play left or center. Started Friday night in left field, played Saturday and Sunday in center field. He misplayed a ball. Randall might have gotten out of the inning scoreless if Bryson Smith hadn't a total. He was playing like Andrew Jones shallow and had totally misplayed a ball.
Yeah.
That was ruled a double because, I mean, he didn't physically do anything wrong,
right.
you know? He didn't, like, didn't go off his glove or anything, but he just totally didn't see how it went off the bat. And he looked fine out there. He gunned down a guy.
Yeah,
he obviously has a strong arm. He threw a runner out at home. But we'll see. I feel like Cam's going to get a lot of – there was 2 lefties, so I feel like Cam's – when I face a lot of righties, Cam's going to get a lot more starts down in center field.
Yeah.
And Tyler Thompson will play a lot in left field. He's hurt right now with a hamstring, so whenever he comes back, we'll see what happens with him.
So a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah. From what I saw, Cam Washington looks like he has the better instincts in center field right now, but I think Bryson Smith will adjust to it more as the season goes. He's a serviceable center fielder.
Right.
He's got the arm. It's just he needs to work on reading the ball a little better.
Once he stops double clutching, yeah. that's probably the next step for him. Who's disappointing at the plate for the Gators this weekend?
Yeah, Zunino looked uncomfortable. He didn't at all look like he had seen a lot of live pitching during the off season. Maybe his thumb's still bothering. I don't know. He wasn't looking too good. Tucker looked really strong Friday, and then Saturday he was just completely overmatched. He had 2 strikeouts, went 0-for-4. I think I'm doing this off the top of my head, but I'm checking out. I think he went 0-for-4 and had 2 strikeouts on Saturday. He and Zunino combined for like an 0-for-8 and five strikeouts, I think, Saturday afternoon. So, yeah.
Were they batting at this point?
Tucker's batting third.
And Zunino is
sixth.
Okay. Certainly not what you want from the middle of
Brian Johnson. I don't know what did he finish. He didn't do anything. I mean, he had a couple base hits. He had a couple balls that he hit the other way that were kind of nice.
3 of 11 at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, so he did kind of average. It's kind of really how everybody did. I mean, no one did spectacular except for Fantano.
Best on Friday when he was starting, he had ripped 2 doubles to center field.
So a weird like dual threat type thing. Is he one of those guys? I don't know if that's been written or whatever, but like he's one of those guys who does best when he is pitching. One of those like middle school type players.
Yeah,
that's what it seemed like this weekend.
That'll be interesting to keep an eye. Does he DH? What does he play? Is he always DH?
When he's pitching, he's DH. Right. Also, when he's not pitching, they're using him out at first.
Okay, all right, that makes sense.
He played yesterday. He DH'd, and Ben McMahon got his start at first.
Right, so,
Tyler.
Yeah, another thing to keep an eye on there. I want to talk about sort of moving away from opening weekend, the new bats thing. Tom, you wrote a story about that. We've referenced it several times. Did that have a noticeable effect, and do you see that having a noticeable effect, more of a noticeable effect as the year goes on? First of all, explain the new bat rules.
All right. The NCAA instituted new bat rules, or new standards for the bats, for metal bats, that is, to make them produce more like wooden bats do. It reduces the trampoline effect on the ball has coming off the bat. I don't know what the exact number is for that. Some scientific stuff.
We'll get the sports science people in here from ESPN. They'll explain it all.
And it reduces the sweet spot on the bat too. So they're expecting to see lower run production this year. The reason they did it, the home run numbers and average run per game numbers were just on an increase over the last 4 seasons. So the NCAA wanted to curb that, and their response was changing the bats.
I mean, I guess that's the logical thing. You got to think, it seems like Florida's team is based pretty heavily on pitching and defense this year. I mean, you got to think that benefits a team like them who's going to play, I don't know if they can play small ball, but, you know, they can win the game in other ways other than just knocking 4 home runs a game.
Yeah, Josh Adams was saying last week before the opening series, he thinks it's going to change the way that a lot of teams approach the game. He thinks more teams are going to try to bunt for hits. But the way their team's set up, he's excited about it. He thinks that their pitchers are just going to carve people up, which they did.
Yeah, if the first weekend's any sample, then that seems to be the case here.
Are we going to get more ground balls, too?
Right. I mean, this is right up Nolan Fontana's alley. It appears that Nolan Fontana was the biggest beneficiary of the new bat rules, from what we can tell from opening weekend.
Yeah, the bats looked like, I mean, it didn't really hurt Florida, but I think if they had last year's bats, they would have had a few more home runs on the weekend.
All right. I mean, how many? Did they just have the 1 home run? Tucker?
Two. Zunino had one yesterday.
Zunino. All right. I mean, was this a power? What were their power numbers last year, and how do you feel it projects with sort of that middle
Tucker
of the lineup?
Tucker had 11 home runs last year.
Yeah, they didn't hit a lot last year.
Maddox,
Florida isn't.
Maddox led the team with 17.
Florida isn't a. They don't have a ton. I mean, Sullivan says he recruits power, but I think his guys got to have a lot more of the Devils' power than they do the cranking home runs. I think Dendecker last year had the second most home runs on the team. I think he had like 13 or something like that. So
this could end up benefiting Florida, and I mean, especially even on the offensive end, where they're going to gain more of an advantage from what other teams lose.
Right, getting gappers instead of
All right, and more big picture stuff on the season. We've talked about it a little bit here. Teams ranked number 1. First of all, is that fair? Based on like what you've seen, otherwise ranked number 1 by Baseball America, and then like, can they keep that up? How long do they keep that up?
So making a prediction here,
yeah.
I think
what do they finish?
I think Florida makes it to Omaha, and then gets swept or knocked down in the final against UCLA, maybe TCU. I don't think Florida has kind of like the Oakland A's staff, where they have a lot of really good right now. I mean, Whitson could totally turn into this, you know, flame throwing ace But right now they have a lot of really good pitchers, but not like a front top of the line, you know, Halliday, you know, not obvious, no one's going to. But UCLA has that. Garrett Cole, in his first start of the season on Friday night, threw a one-hit shutout and had 11 strikeouts.
Yeah, he also threw like 90 pitches.
It doesn't matter how many pitches he threw. It's like the difference is, Sullivan may be keeping – I mean, Florida's pitchers want a 70-pitch limit.
Yeah.
Garrett Cole wasn't on that limit, and he went down there and just struck him out. UCLA's two starters were ESPN's only two starting pitching All-Americans.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, that was a little curious.
they got just some nasty arms. TCU has a guy that went 16-0 last year with a 3.00 ERA. So we'll see. I mean, it's kind of the same thing that happened to Florida last season. When they got to Omaha, they went up against some of these studs, and they got knocked down. Right. So I kind of predict that. I think they'll go farther. I think they'll actually win some of the round-robin games. But then in the finals, I think that they're just going to be overwhelmed.
Do you think the number one preseason prediction is fair, though, based on what we've...
No, I definitely think it is. From where they went last season and all the different pieces they returned, because UCLA did lose like four big stalwarts from their bullpen. Florida literally only lost Dendecker and their closer. And the closer, he had 11 saves. It wasn't like he was freaking like John Smoltz back there and saved 50 games, you know? So 11, you know, it wasn't like he was in the midst of every single game that he was such an integral part. He definitely had a hell of a year for Florida last year. I think he led the team in ERA. But, I mean, I think they'll get to Omaha and, like I said, a little better.
Step by step. All right,
yeah.
Tom?
I think they get to Omaha and actually win a few games this year. I can't say right now for sure they're going to win it. But if Jesse's going to take them losing to UCLA, I'll go ahead and say they'll lose to TCU. And
there you go. What did they finish?
So one of us could probably be right.
Just for the listeners, what did they do last year? What was there? That was a very brief stay.
They got
swept in Omaha.
They went to Omaha and UCLA knocked the crap out of them.
And then Florida State knocked them out of the tournament.
Wow. All right. So yeah, they got to win a game in Omaha. It's step by step. For
and some people have said that this dates back to his time at Clemson and he wasn't the head coach, but that O'Sullivan teams and his pitchers get tight during Omaha. This was something that was told to me. So they didn't perform particularly well last season, so it could be something to look at, you know, if they make it there this year, because it was, you know,
perform poorly under pressure.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll
see.
That
was the thing last year. Like, they were on a roll beating Miami in the Super Regionals, and then when they got to Omaha, their defense and pitching just let them down.
Well, I mean, they certainly think that if they built this team around defensive pitching, I mean, the pitching is what matters when you get to that point of the year, because it's who can shut down the other team's lineup for one game, you know, for a very short amount of time. Let's talk about strengths and weaknesses of the lineup, though. Talk about guys you really like, guys you think could be moving out, moving down, et cetera, et cetera.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start at the very beginning, Tom. That's a very good place to start.
Top of the lineup, leading off, they have Nolan Fontana there. He's great on offense and defense. I know he committed an error Sunday. Last season, he didn't commit his first error until like 30-some odd games in there. But, I mean...
I didn't realize he was that good defensively.
Yeah, I mean, when you're getting on base, you know, 11 out of 14 times, you're doing something right.
Right. Who was the clown they had at shortstop like 2 years a year? Was it last year or 2 years ago?
Fontana was there last year.
It was the guy 2 years ago. Just would not stop making errors. So Fontana, huge upgrade, obviously, from that. But let's keep going, moving on down. Do you think he stays shortstop?
I think it was Bozo. Bozo the clown.
Bozo the clown. I knew I was forgetting someone. And then moving on down. Who else we got to that?
Josh Adams hitting second right now.
Playing second.
Hitting and playing second.
Hitting and playing
number
second.
Two in your lineups and in your hearts.
Anywhere's number two.
There you go.
Just two everywhere.
Yeah. What's his... I mean, he's... We've talked about him. I know you wrote a story about him sort of overcoming the last year slump, very similar to...
Dendecker's.
Yeah, he's... We'll see. I mean, he had a couple hits. He didn't even go hitless this weekend like, you know, some other guys or didn't really... And he had a couple nice sacrifice bunts and did some good things. But like I said, he failed to move the runners over a couple times. But, number three, Tucker, is batting third right now. I mean, he's going to looked to be the most consistent hitter for Florida. I think even more than Fontana. I mean, Fontana's likely going to have the highest average, but I think the biggest key to Florida scoring runs is going to be how well Tucker plates Fontana.
Right.
Maddox is right behind him. I mean, I think he's going to be consistent. I don't think he's ever going to hit 350, but I think that, you know, he'll hit. Maddox will lead the Gators in home runs this season.
Yeah, you got him well protected in the lineup with Tucker in front of him, and then behind him you have Brian Johnson hitting most times.
Yeah, and I think Johnson actually might have the second. His stroke is just – he's kind of got that lefty Sean Casey stroke where he can take the ball the other way pretty easily. I mean, it's like a natural inside-out almost. So I think he's going to do well. Zunino, we'll see. I mean, yeah. He didn't have a lights-out year last year, and he struggled to start the season. So he may actually drop in the order. Totally might not be batting sixth for the rest of the season if he continues his –
He came on strong toward the end of last year, but then this opening weekend didn't look too good. Even the at-bat that he hit that home run, he was trying to lay down a drag bunt at first. Then two pitches later, he's like, I'll take a half.
Screw it, I'll hit a home run.
They hung a curveball, so I mean, he knocked out a curveball. 7-8-9, that's what's going to be in flux. I mean, Zach Powers, freshman third baseman, played pretty well his first, and he came in as a defensive replacement, I think, all three games.
Nah, he started at third on...
No, I know what I'm saying, but he came in the other two games. Yeah. He came in as a defensive replacement. He looks like he's got a lot of talent and skills. I don't know about the bat. I think he had the first hit for the Gators Friday night.
And he's got a great name for a baseball player.
Really strong name.
And then, you know, Piggott will be down there somewhere. Smith will be down there. McMahon. Cam Washington. So, I mean, the bottom of the
Tyler
order
Thompson
is...
Thompson will be down there when he gets healthy.
A lot of moving parts then.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts. Now.
The first two-thirds of your lineup are pretty set.
Right. And, I mean, ideally, in a dream world, that's what you want as a coach and as a manager coming in. You're like, I got these six guys who I can count on to go out there every day. And then, you can go based on matchups and defensive needs and whatnot in the bottom third. Defensively, strengths and weaknesses of this team. We've talked about hitting and pitching.
Well, obviously the pitching, but right up the middle, Fontana and Adams, that double play tandem. I mean, they were on point on the weekend.
I was really impressed, and it's funny because I did a preseason story about how he wasn't good last season. But Maddox was really impressive out there this weekend at both third and first base. He kind of used his catcher skills of digging balls out of the dirt. He played first Friday night and switched over, I think, yesterday. Yeah. He dug several balls out of the dirt on low throws from third and short, so he looked well. And then he also made a couple of really nice plays to his left. At third base, so he played. And he's got a gun. I mean, a lot of people actually project Maddox to when he goes to the pros to be a pitcher.
He
might actually pitch this season for Florida. He can apparently hit without even throwing that 94, 95 on the gun. So
yeah, Sully was saying he had him out there throwing last week, and he was hitting 94. Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him come out of the bullpen at some point this season.
There's a lot of people around the team and associated with Florida baseball that seem to think that when it all said and done, because of his body and because he does, God bless him, Maddox runs like he's got two left feet. So predict him to eventually, when he goes to pro ball, likely be a pitcher.
Huh. Give him some credit though. He said he dropped 10 to 15 pounds in the off season, and
yeah, he looked different.
You could tell on the base paths. Like he beat out a couple throws at first over the weekend.
Huh. All right, let's shift gears here a little bit and do some projections.
That guy had two right feet.
There you go. Do some projections here on who we think is going to lead the Gators in. Let's start with batting average and home runs. We'll do two hitting categories first. Batting average, we're really offending the sabermetrics, folks. So don't worry, stick with us for the sports journalism segment. We'll get you back. But batting average and home runs, leaders for the Gators at the end of the season.
Well, because of Fontana's defensive prowess, I think his WAR, WAR would be pretty darn high.
So, nuts, yeah.
So those sabermetric buddies out there can just jump on the Fontana. Go buy your number four jerseys, kids, because he'll be all over that. I mean, I think Fontana will lead the team in batting. I think Johnson could push him. I mean, last year Johnson was Johnson only hit four home runs last season. People consider him this power hitter, but he is this kind of like gap style hitter, and he puts a lot of balls in play. And so I think he will have a really high average when it's all said and done. I think Fontana's going to lead a team in average, and I think Maddox is going to lead a team in home runs again, just because I think the only person that could push him is Tucker, and I don't know if Tucker has infinitely more power than him. So that would be my two predictions.
Tom?
I'm also going to go with Fontana for batting average, especially after that hot start. But I'm actually going to go with Tucker for home runs, just because last year, I think Maddox did have more home runs last year, but people didn't know what to expect out of Maddox batting behind Tucker.
Right.
But I think now that they know that Maddox is a power hitter, Tucker's going to see some more balls than he did last year.
Right. Certainly he got pitched around a lot because he had an outrageous freshman season, and people didn't necessarily know what to expect out of Maddox. I was going to say, if there was randomly another freshman power hitter coming in to hit behind Maddox, just based on the way things have gone, it would have to be him coming in. But I'd say Tucker as well. Actually, I think Tucker has a nice bounce back year. And it's hard to disagree with the Nolan Fontana bandwagon at this point. That was just a hell of an opening weekend for him.
His VORP's pretty good, too.
So we've been told. Let's check out who you think is going to be, for pitching, the wins leader, which, as we said, meaningless stat. Stick with the sabermetric, folks. And strikeouts leader.
All right. Strikeouts, I mean, I'll just go Whitson. I think that it's also because he had that funny quote about, you know, smelling blood and fish in the water thing. He is a prototypical strikeout pitcher. I mean, Randall wants you to hit his ball and put it in play and let him play defense behind him. But Whitson is in there. I mean, Whitson obviously threw a lot more balls, even though he was really consistent around the strike zone. He gets into deeper counts. His game is more of trying to blow away the last hitter, you know, making him swing at a diving slider in the dirt. So I think Whitson will definitely lead the team in strikeouts, and I think Randall will actually lead the team in wins.
Tom?
Yeah, I'm with Jesse on Whitson for the strikeouts. And I'll even go further and say that he'll lead the team in wins, too. I think he'll emerge as that ace that they want as the season goes on.
Right.
Especially once Sully lets him get a little further into games as far as pitch count goes.
Right. That's why, actually, I'm going to pick him for the strikeout leader. I know significantly less about this team than either of you two, but just it's hard to argue against him from what we've seen so far. And I'm going to side with Jesse on the Randall thing. I think he's going to be the most consistently always in the rotation.
Yeah. That's what scared the thing. The only thing that doesn't scare me. I could care less. But what would nervous me if I was a Florida fan looking at this game is just that the scout said that at the end of that 60 some odd pitches, Whitson was down from 95 to like 91. And I don't know how much he has in the tank. Granted, he put a lot into that start. There was a lot, you know, he was nervous as hell. Right, there was a lot of butterflies. It was emotional. But Randall can go out there and just talk. I feel like he easily could have gone 7 and would have been fine, you know, if it wasn't for this pitch count. I think Randall will definitely go deeper into games, and we'll see how far they let Whitson go as the season goes on. Yeah. But he may not make it out of the 5th or 6th for the first month of the season.
Yeah, I think as the season progresses, though, his arm is going to adjust more to the game because, you know, he hasn't thrown more than 3 innings since he got here.
Right. The comparison I made between the two is just from hearing y'all talk about Hudson Randall, and this is another Rays reference because that's pretty much all baseball I know, is Jeff Niemann. Just sort of big, slow, consistent, you know, doesn't really labor.
About half the size of Niemann, right, in terms of bulk and girth. Yeah. But, yeah.
But just sort of doesn't labor, just gets to it very consistently, very easily. It's kind of effortless.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good tool. You almost want that more so. It's sort of that risk-reward, you know. Maybe he's never going to throw a perfect game, but he's also never going to give up 9 runs, in it, you know.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah.
Gives up a lot of ground balls, too. So, I mean, with that defense you have behind him, I mean, that's what you want.
That's what you want, sabermetrics, guys. All right, speaking of sabermetrics, we're going to do our intro to sports journalism segment here. We talk about one thing in the field of sports journalism. We've actually gotten some feedback on this stuff recently and proposed topics from our listeners, so I really appreciate that. Good, we're not,
good listeners.
Yeah, well, we do. We have great listeners. That's the thing about this. We don't have a ton of listeners, but the listeners we have, we're about quality over quantity.
Yeah, here at the Alligator Sports. Out there.
Definitely.
We
one of them.
Hit friends. Tell your friends.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't have friends, just tell your mom.
She'll listen. Our moms listen. They're very supportive.
Yep.
that's fair. We got a reader or listener comment from Ed Spillane, one of our most loyal listeners, who asked a question about something we talked about a couple weeks ago, given Kyle's discussion about the myth of teams winning at close games and how that matters more than, you know, wins, losses, and whatnot.
says, what effect has the amount of statistics available now had on current journalists? Is it about the same as that on the fan, or do you think journalists even more so separate into camps based on those who revel in numbers to gain insight, or those who go more for their intuition or emotional love for the sport athleticism? I know it's not a black and white issue, but I've noticed at least on sports podcasts more and more journalists who employ stats to pop the balloon of long-held beliefs. That's a very interesting question, especially relevant since we're talking baseball today. What is y'all's take just on sort of how advanced statistics have affected sports reporting and your evaluation of talent?
Well, I actually thought you were going to lead off this discussion because you're Mr. Sabermetrics guy for the Rays. No, but I think that the biggest thing that the whole statistical revolution has done is it has actually given concrete data to support actual theories. Mm-hmm. For so long, people just threw out theories as blanket statements, and they had no real proof that these things were actually true or false or had value or didn't have value. And now with baseball, with the crazy baseball statistical data, and with hoops, you got hoop data, you know, charting how many shots somebody takes from one specific, you know, area on the court. You can use all these different stats to formulate an argument that then you can actually prove. Mm-hmm. I do think that at times you can use stats too much, and the pendulum can swing too far to the right, and you get so stat heavy. You lose sight of that they're actually playing a game,
right,
and that there is some intuition involved. I mean, you can't tell me last year as a Braves fan that Kenshin Kawakami had some value statistically, even though he had lost 11 games, and every time he went out there, I wanted to shoot him. I mean, it's just like that's when sometimes it's gone too far, but I think consistently it can give you a good base to start to make an argument, and it gives you, you know, you can formulate an opinion based off of, like in baseball, WAR and VORP and that kind of stuff,
right,
while still including some of the old intuition stuff of a guy knocks in 110 runs, even if he's batting 270, he still has value type of thing.
Right. You mentioned the Rays thing. I dealt with this a whole lot in the summer with MLB because it's a very – to me, the statistical thing has actually – greaten the divide between fans and journalists, because I think fans, and specifically a very niche group of people online, people who grew up with this stuff, people who grew up reading Bill James and Moneyball and whatnot, they understand this so much that they think that it should be catered toward them, which is fair, and there's a market for that.
It's a little pretentious. They got
a
some
little
people
bit,
have, yeah,
yeah. But you know, they don't understand that. It's like soccer fans in America. They don't understand, and they exclude you because you don't fully understand what makes their thing so great.
Yes, we are that way.
Right.
Back off.
Right. I live with some of them. But the thing is that it's great in that divide because journalists aren't necessarily writing for those people. Journalists are writing to tell stories for sort of, especially in the newspaper business, for a very different market. And, like, those people aren't going to take the time to understand VORP, you know? They don't even know what VORP means. So, like, you can't necessarily cater to the statistical crowd, the sabermetric crowd, based on who your reading audience is. And that was a very big topic of debate because I've grown up reading both. You know, like, I read the St. Pete Times articles for the Rays, and I read D-Rays Bay, which is the big SB Nation, whatever it is, sabermetric community for the Rays. So I grew up with both and understood both sides of it, which made me a very weird person in the press box because people would argue, like, he's just a clutch hitter, you know? That guy just always gets on base. And I'm like, actually, these stats say this. And, you know, it's a weird combination of the two because they don't get along at all. Old school, new school, very weird mix. And I think our generation is growing up as sort of a healthy medium between the two if we, you know, take the responsibility to understand both sides of the coin. And we can sort of bring a little bit of balance between really unnecessarily stat heavy and really, really, really ridiculously like, well, my gut says this. And I think that's sort of where we're heading right now.
Yeah, I think and I also think that you can use stats way more in baseball. Obviously baseball is built on statistics. But I think they're even valuable. Like, I mean, hoop data has some crazy interesting stuff just about, you know, oh, well, I think Kobe Bryant's awesome all the time shooting from this spot. Well, no, he's actually not. You know, that place on the floor is actually his weakest spot. He, you know, scores a rate of, you know, X less percent. And mm-hmm. So I think across the board it has definitely made sports more interesting to the most avid viewers,
right,
but has likely separated the balance between – the Yes Man fan and the people that are actively seeking this information.
Exactly. And yeah, I like that you said it was mostly about baseball, because I think there's some – like football, I think it's really hard to quantify so, like advanced statistics, you know. And even a basketball to a certain extent, because I think basketball is so much based on things that are greater than just stats and ability. I think there's a lot of feel and a lot of personality that comes out in basketball.
Yeah, there was a big article I think like a year or two ago that, you know, Shane Battier was rated like one of the most useless statistically players in the NBA. And it's like, well, no. I mean, he brings stuff that is hard to formulate through a stat, you know, through the hustle plays and that kind of stuff. And basketball is still catching up. They're now, you know, today as we speak, implementing new stats, whereas Vorp and War and this stuff has been around for a little while. Basketball is creating these new stats for hustle plays and that different kind of things.
Basketball is going to refer to them as the Dan Warner.
So. Rightfully so.
The things that don't appear in the box score should.
Yeah, but are very important to a team winning or not winning, as was the case with Dan Warner. But yeah, I think baseball is so, and you guys can talk about this, is more important statistically because it's all kind of one-on-one situations. It's pitcher versus batter. It's,
baseball,
you know,
is a game of numbers. Well, you know, it's very concrete. This happens. You have one thing going on at a time.
Right.
Well, as opposed to like basketball and football, no, it's all about the flow of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Football, you have 22 guys on the field doing 22 different things at any given time.
Right. It's like, how do you quantify how well someone moves without the ball in basketball? You know, how well do you quantify how well someone sets a screen, how well someone comes off a pick, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's kind of the same way. Like how the average viewer can't quantify when someone says, "Well, that offensive lineman was just terrible." You know, if half the time they didn't actually see what he was doing, that's terrible. Or better yet, you can actually tell when somebody is terrible, but you don't actually know when they're doing really well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of times it's like, well, that guy's the best offensive lineman. It's like, well, I just saw him give up a sack. Yeah, but he is.
Right.
That guy has the best footwork in the game. And, like, well, we don't know what the hell
exactly.
that means.
Yeah, we're not
like,
scouts. Yeah. I can't tell you how great his footwork is.
Yeah, well, like, the average person doesn't have the capability to grade out offensive linemen.
Well, and a lot of people don't care about that kind of stuff. And that's even further separates the balance between the heavy statistical data and just the yes man, the average viewer, you know, using their intuition that this guy's awesome and this guy sucks and I like this team and I hate that team. And
all right, let's round out this show with our weekly awards. We got our Major Right Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and our Wandy Pierre-Louis Bad Angles of the Week. One good thing, one bad thing in the world of sports. Or not the world of sports this week. Let's start with our majors, because I firmly believe in ending on a bad note, with Tom.
All right, my major is going to go to James Jones of the Miami Heat for holding it down on All-Star Saturday night. Coming the latest in a long line of mediocre Heat players to win the three-point shootout.
Mediocre Heat players. That's true.
Following in the footsteps of Jason Capono and Daquan Cook. Yes, Daquan Cook
Good
won a
God.
Three-point shootout 1 year. So yeah, big props to him, especially, you know, first time any member of the Heat beat the Celtics in anything this season.
Very true. Jesse?
My major's got to go to Sir Charles. Charles Barkley was epic this weekend. For me, he was the only thing that really kept up the All-Star weekend alive. I mean, he just had his rare in comedy going all weekend during the dunk contest when Blake Griffin had that commercial-like finish to his final dunk or whatever. Charles Barkley laughed and said it was a terrible dunk, but it said it didn't matter because it was like when you're dating a fine woman and she's stupid, nobody cares. So I thought that was pretty good. And last night he made a joke about popping Viagra like Tic Tac. So he was pretty great. It was his birthday this weekend. He got a cake with like 48 Krispy Kreme donuts. So nobody's better than Charles. So I definitely got to give props to Charles.
Let's be real though. Charles Barkley is always on point. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago when he got that DUI on New Year's Eve, and you know, he got suspended for like a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
He made his return during All-Star Weekend, and that was just the greatest thing ever.
Right. I hope Charles never changes. Like, I hope he's this way until he does.
If I were a resident of Alabama and he ran for governor, I'd vote for him.
Absolutely.
When I was in like high school and even. Yeah, I think it was in high school when he got on TNT on like Thursday nights. I'd specifically just stay up super late because when it's like unedited Charles at like 1 a.m.
Terrible.
And literally, it's like him and Johnson and Kenny, and they're just hilarious. The three of them are the best analyst, you know, pre-studio analyst of anybody.
I agree. Yeah.
One of the best things was that time that they played a joke on him reading the teleprompter, like Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
It's like, now stay tuned for this, and I'm a huge idiot.
Yeah, I love Charles. good, definitely a well-deserved award here. I'm going to give mine sort of to the dunk contest. I can't fully approve of it for the reason Tom's about to talk about here, but I thought it was the best dunk contest since Vince Carter was just going nuts and doing crazy stuff back in the day when he was originally sticking his elbow down the rim. I thought, however, specifically want to give shout-outs to Serge Ibaka and DeMar DeRozan. You guys should have been in the finals. I loved you guys. I loved your dunks. And Tom, give the Wandy, the relevant Wandy here, so we can start hating.
All right, my Wandy is going to Blake Griffin.
Correct.
The full award, you know, it's the Wandy Pierre bad angle of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And Blake Griffin took a bad angle on his last dunk when he jumped over the car. All right, you jumped over the hood of a car. A lot of people could do that. I don't know how many people could do it and dunk a ball, but I'm sure plenty in the NBA can. Right. You want to really impress me? Jump over the top of the car with Baron Davis throwing the lob there.
Jump a long way.
Yeah, jump over the car from the hood to the trunk.
Yeah.
That'll really blow my mind.
Or do that Kobe thing in the commercial where the car's driving at him and he has to jump over it and dunk as it's driving under him. I don't know. There's a ton of things he could have done there.
There's a lot of product placement in that.
By Kia, apparently.
Yeah, and if you're going to jump over the hood of a car, do something more interesting with the dunk. I know he said he was supposed to do like a windmill or something,
right.
But didn't. But.
No. Yeah, this is a great reference. Wale, the rapper, tweeted, like, never seen anybody jump into a two-handed dunk before. Never. And I was like, wow. Well, hate from Wale.
Wale's coming to town this weekend.
That's right. I'll give him a high five on his hatred of Blake Griffin. But yeah, I thought that was completely staged. I thought the NBA wanted Blake Griffin to win.
There's no way he wasn't going to win when it's in L.A. and all this hype around all these in-game dunks. Don't get me wrong, he's a great in-game dunker.
Yeah.
One day he's going to kill someone.
Yeah. Possibly himself.
Yeah.
That's how I said he's going to die. He's going to throw the ball down so hard it's going to hit him in the face, and he's going to concuss himself on the floor, pass out, and die.
I saw someone joking, like, you know, his dunk looks simple, but you got to take into account the Clipper curse.
Right, yeah.
What if he messed up and just shattered his kneecap again on the hood of the car?
He's overcoming a lot just to get any dunk off that he does. But yeah, I completely agree with you on that one. So it's a well-deserved Wandy. Jesse?
My Wandy's got to go. I gotta admit, I didn't see much Friday night, whatever happened with the rookie challenge. I caught the dunk contest. I didn't really see much of the three-point. But the performances that I caught on Sunday were just bar none terrible. And Mr. Lenny Kravitz topped it off. How in God's name the NBA chose Lenny freaking Kravitz to headline its all-star like celebration in LA. Right. It's not like they're in freaking Tucson. Like they can get people to LA. They couldn't find another washed up 90s guy. I mean, it was legitimately terrible. Not only did they let him just do one song, he did like three songs.
What was his last relevant song? Fly Away?
Yeah, no, I think
American Woman.
I think that's what he ended on, one of those. I mean, it was just terrible. I mean, I couldn't even believe it.
Was that like the second Austin Powers movie?
He legitimately looks so happy just to be there. Like, dude. I mean, I don't.
Lenny Kravitz has a random amount of Hollywood pull, though. I feel like he's – I don't remember the exact – I feel like he's from a semi-famous family. Yeah. That's true. From like a semi-famous parents or something like that. He's like a little black, a little Jewish, a little white. Like he's got a lot going for him as far as like accessibility.
So he's like Drake.
He's a little bit of Drake, except like the friendly like 1990s pop rock star Drake. I'm not going to lie. I enjoyed some of Lenny Kravitz's work back in the day. However – come on, like it's All-Star Weekend.
Yeah. I mean, well, they had CeeLo, I guess, go before the slam dunk.
Yeah.
Is that when he went? What they should have switched that. I mean, CeeLo's way more relevant right now. Even if you don't like him or do like him, at least he's like really big right now.
To be fair, though, CeeLo's performance on Saturday was pretty boring.
Really? No, I know he was just kind of like standing there. Yeah. He had a sweet jumpsuit though. Some nice diamonds on that.
Yeah, they're jumping. Looked like Charles Barkley in a green jumpsuit.
Adidas hooked him up.
But the NBA did step it up a little bit with the halftime show, even though Rihanna's a horrible live performer. You know, she brought out Drake and Kanye, too, so.
Yeah.
And everybody loves a little Kanye West cameo.
That was certainly well played. But, yeah, Lenny Kravitz. The other piece of hate I want to drop on Lenny Kravitz, and I've been wanting to do this for about 10 years now. Lenny Kravitz has one drum beat in every one of his songs. And Lenny Kravitz gets praised because he's like Prince and he can play 11 instruments or whatever. Every Lenny Kravitz drum beat is the exact same thing. It's just slowed down in some songs or sped up in others, but it's the same thing because he plays drums. And apparently when he was learning to play all 19 instruments that he plays, he didn't bother to learn more than one thing on the drums. So screw you, Lenny Kravitz. And I'm going to give my Wandy a little off the board here. To alligator readers, not including you, my dear sports readers, because I love all of you, but student government elections are coming up in Florida. That's always a fun time of the year, and the alligator does its semesterly yearly thing where we endorse a party, And this one, we endorsed the Unite Party, which is sort of the usual power. It's a little bit of
the good old boys.
The good old boys, what you might call the frat party, and so on and so forth. But the Alligator made it very clear, our editorial board, which I am not a part of, despite, you know, being the sports editor, that we had, like, it was a very tough decision. It was a very hard decision to make. Somebody almost cried. The person I'm closest with on the editorial board almost cried after making the decision. It was a very tough thing for them to do. So we posted that editorial on our website, and not 3 hours later, after it being posted last night, I'm in the office uploading our video show, and I checked the comments, and there was one creepy dude had posted a Facebook quote of mine, and then screenshots of my Facebook page saying, like, the Alligator, like, lets this guy be an editor, or something like, right-wing columns.
All he does is tweet about sports.
I'm a racist tool, from what I've learned. All I do is tweet about sports, which, you know, I'm sorry, being a sports editor and a sports writer and a sports fan, that's probably my fault that I tweet so much about sports. And I'm racist because my buddy Pedro once was a little sauced, and my buddy Pedro, by the way, who is Hispanic, was a little sauced and said something about how he's for police brutality because somebody has got to keep, and he said us, like, the minorities in check, and then he said us minorities because Pedro is Hispanic, Spanish is the first language spoken in his house. I posted that on Facebook, as people do with their friends' funny quotes. Apparently that makes me a racist. So, student government, people who are involved in that and people who read The Alligator about student government stuff, you are all creepy and really, really, really invading my privacy. So my Facebook is now on private. I will continue only posting about sports on Twitter, and you can just go to hell.
Yeah, and I know you said you saw those comments when you were posting the video show.
I was.
We should take this time to plug it real quick.
Oh, absolutely. That's on my notes, Tom. I'm always ready for that.
Should have expected that.
Since we're wrapping up the show, check out our video show.
Get a lot of me.
A lot of Jesse.
A lot of me.
So much Jesse.
You get so much me that I, like, half-assed it about as hard as you can do that. So
yeah, Jesse's just chilling on screen with his Ray-Bans.
Jesse is the most chill person we've ever had on camera. I mean, it's let's put it this way, and I don't want to hate on Greg. It's the exact opposite of having Greg on camera, because Greg is very, like, control. You know, he's always very aware of what he's doing with his hands. Jesse, just completely chill. And that's what makes people good on TV.
My favorite was Jesse in the background of the Carson Whitson video.
Yeah, just there. Posting up with the recorder behind. There's a whole lot of Jesse in this video show, so I'm going to recommend. Yeah. If you've enjoyed what we've talked about on this show, it's a lot of baseball. If you enjoy seeing us mess up, which I assume you also do if you listen to the show, because we do it a lot, there's a blooper outtake reel at the end of the show, which is really funny.
I'm a little disappointed we didn't get any video of you airballing one of those shots.
None of my airballs. I almost swear profusely on the show, but I held myself back twice, something that you two guys could not hold yourself back from doing. So Matt Watts, our producer, who did a really great job on that on the video this week, edited, censored you guys, hence the reference at the beginning of the show. But I'd highly recommend you check out this week's video show at alligatorsports.org. We need the views. We definitely appreciate it. And send any feedback on that, as well as the podcast, to podcast@alligator.org. We're definitely listening. We're up to suggestions. We should be starting some new stuff, make it look a little more professional in the next coming weeks, but we're definitely interested in hearing what you want to see from us. Otherwise, check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/alligatorsports, twitter.com/Tomas_Verde.
It's my name in Spanish.
Jesse's still not on the Twitter bandwagon.
Gotta get him on that, man.
You can check me out at Adam D. Berry. All I do is tweet about sports and probably student government from here on out. And then you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. Definitely appreciate your feedback, criticisms, and whatnot on there. We'll be back next week, probably talking a little Florida basketball. It's been a while since we had a good, solid Florida basketball discussion by the time that one will go up. So
let's do it.
Tune in next week. Thanks for listening.